I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Next texter, Ton wants to talk about amaryllis bulbs. They have one that's in a plastic and has wax on the bottom. They want to transfer the bulb to a pot, and they would like to know how to take care of it. Now, I'm assuming this is probably one that they just recently got that was in a box type thing.
Yes, they can transfer that to a pot, but it needs to be a fairly narrow pot that's maybe a half inch wider than the bulb, and then deeper so it can root. You don't want that in a very wide pot. If you put it in a pot too wide, it may actually prevent it from blooming. They like to be a little bit tight in there, a little bit snug.
I didn't realize that. Mine are all in snug pots, but that's just the way I got them.
Yes. So because it's been already trained, for lack of a better word, to bloom because it's brand new, if you want to regrow it, then you would get it in good conditions this winter in as bright of light as possible, off to the side of a window preferably, and turn it, you know, every week to keep it going, and then just let it grow when it's done blooming as a house plant. When the flowers are spent, you can follow the flower stem down toward the base and cut the stem out, but don't cut the leaves off, and just grow it as a house plant. And then eventually, during the summer, it'll keep going, and you just let it go and let it go. And then sometime mid-September, stop watering and let it go dormant. You won't kill the bulb, but you need to make sure that the leaves dry out. And then you would put it in an unheated room in that container with just slightly moist soil for 8 to 10 weeks. And you need to start watching it after about 7 or 8 weeks. And if you start to see any bud formation on the top of the bulb, it's time to bring it out into the light again and start watering again. But if after about 8 or 10 weeks, if you don't see any bud formation, bring it out anyway, put water around it, and then regrow it. Now, when you start to get light, daylight's increasing in February and March, you can start using half-strength house fertilizer on it just to get it enough energy. I think one of the biggest difficulties is getting enough sunlight to it after it's done blooming until you have to have it go dormant so that it gets enough energy to rebloom.
Oh, so I'm wondering, does it require a certain type of, she's repotting it, certain type of soil?
Average potting soil. Don't skimp on potting soil and get the absolute cheapest stuff you can find because you get what you pay for with it. But a decent potting soil will be fine.
And then how deep? You mentioned that it likes to be snug.
It does.
How deep should it be planted in a pot?
It should have the kind of how it came. You know, you should have the
top
of that bulb, you know,
exposed
out of the soil, and then the bulb should be placed in there. If you bury it too deep, it may leaf, but it would maybe prevent it from blooming.
Right. Our next texter would like to know if Morning Glory will outcompete strawberries, or will strawberries outcompete Morning Glory, is the way that they ask the question.
If they're in a Wild West shootout, the Morning Glory wins.
The Morning Glory always wins. So this is a really tough one, Ton, because if you have Morning Glory growing alongside of your strawberry plants, it's tough to kill it.
It is, and you do need to eradicate it if you're doing a ground cover type situation, or strawberries, even raspberries, because when those grow out, you have a mix of bindweed and whatever else you grew. And how do you go in there and hand pick all that bindweed out once a month? And so if you have a bindweed infested area and are wanting to do ground cover especially, it's just not a sustainable situation.
It's very frustrating. You almost have to eradicate it, and you may have to sacrifice your strawberries and start all over.
You may, or find a new home for your strawberries and maybe plant some shrubs or something where the bindweed is, that it's going to have some open soil so that it's easier to at least rogue out that bindweed once a month so that you can keep it fairly free. And, you know, if you keep up with it, and it takes a long time, but after 7, 8, 9 years, you can kill the bindweed with just hand pulling it every 3 or 4 weeks, but it takes that long to do.
Definitely takes patience, which I wasn't not given a lot of.
Yes, and I've talked to gardeners that used a process called solarization, and that's where you cover the ground with clear UV-resistant plastic and basically cook the ground. And they had limited success. I think that one of their challenges was that the area they killed out, there was roots beyond where they put the plastic down.
Oh.
And even though they didn't see the vines come up, the roots repenetrated, and they said that it did a good job of reducing the population of bindweed for 2 or 3 years, but it did recover.
That bindweed. Next, a listener would like to know, can they save a 12-year-old Bing cherry tree that has suffered from canker the last 3 years?
Maybe. I just don't know.
What would be their best bet? What
if
should they do?
If the trunk has it in there and more than 60% of the bark has canker in it, then I might do a new Bing cherry in the spring, because you get to a point that, you know, you can't really turn your tree trunks and limbs into Swiss cheese trying to cut that stuff out. And this goes back to the importance of fall painting of young trees, especially fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either wrap them with tree tape or paint them to keep this stuff at bay.
I'm going to wrap it. I'm never going to paint the tree.
Well, it's disheartening.
My brain just can't wrap itself around that. Let's put it that way.
I have 5 gallons of tree paint, and I would be willing to give you a gallon.
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to wrap the tree. I'm not doing that. That's going to look terrible.
Well, in an orchard.
I just say no.
Yeah, in an orchard, I think it's expected.
Okay, that's
if
different.
If it's a tree orchard,
that
but
is different.
If it's your brand new dainty cherry tree.
Yeah, that is never happening.
Especially an ornamental.
You kind of lose the reason for planting the tree that is ornamental, don't you?
You do. And so the tree wrap is more practical for that situation.
Never do.
You know, I would be the one out in my yard painting all the new trees, and my wife would be, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with your wife on that one. Let's take a break here. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you for this final segment of the show. We started the hour talking about wonderful Christmas gifts for gardeners. And we did, Ton, have a couple of listeners who kind of wanted to chime in on that. One of those saying, Fisker's Power Gear is awesome, durable. They love their lifetime warranty. They say the small, medium shovel, the Bully or the Bulldog brand is about $30 and it's heavy duty.
Those are great gifts, and that's one thing that you sometimes get by purchasing contractor grade or more expensive tools is a unconditional lifetime warranty. And so if you break a Pony shovel, you can walk into an Ames dealer and just grab a new one and leave. And the dealer will come get it and give the vendor credit. And that's one of the advantages to companies like Felco and Baco, that everything's replaceable on the pruners and things, but you just get a little peace of mind knowing the quality, but also they back it up with a warranty.
Another texter says, another present idea is the grandpa's weeder. It's really good for people who have a hard time bending over.
I've never used. I wonder if it's like one of the twist weeders that you can use.
It sounds like it might have a long handle or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One growing segment of the horticulture market is assistive devices for aging population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more and more important to allow people to continue their freedom. But they, you know, like my parents are just getting to the point that they're too old to garden. But if you have a raised bed that it's at waist height and then some simple tools, you can still raise a small garden. So there's a lot of things out there that are hitting the market because just there's market there for it. And it's just so important to keep going as long as you can.
Right. One of my favorites that we've talked about so far this season is the electric trimmers.
Because yeah.
Your hands just, oh my gosh, they can only take so much even when you're not, you know, that old.
Yeah. And there's, well, the Stotz equipment that we mentioned last week, they have three or four models, and their lightest model doesn't weigh very much, and it will cut hundreds of cuts before it needs to be recharged, and you can buy an extra battery. But when we talked to Mike, you know, he talked about how it increased their efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have bad hands from, you know, bad joints or arthritis, just to be able to gently pull the trigger, let it make the cut and move on is just so empowering.
All right, let's take a call from Carla this morning. Carla, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes. Oh, I appreciate your show. You do a wonderful job. So
thank you.
I've been going through a lot of challenges and with my younger brother dying and a lot of things happening. But anyhow, in the midst of all the things that are going on during the pandemic, I have a Christmas cactus that is re-blooming. That the plant, I don't know how many years old it is, but is there any way that I can make this happen again, or is there anything edible that I can grow inside during the, you know, the cold weather?
Well, as far as a Christmas cactus, you can just keep it near a cold, drafty window, you know, 3 or 4 inches away, and the side facing the window will start to form flower buds after between 8 and 10 weeks, and then you rotate the plant 180 degrees.
Now, and I can put it right in the window then?
Yes, you can during the winter, or just off to the side, but those branches need to be exposed to temperatures below 55.
Oh my goodness.
At night. And during the day they can heat up, but at night they need those cooler temperatures. Now, as far as growing things indoors, if you wanted to get a simple growing system with some lights over the top, you can purchase them for anywhere from, I've seen them as low as $50 to $75. But if you're going to grow things, the easiest things to do are the greens. So mustard greens, anything in the cabbage family, any lettuces. Those with a grow light are fairly easy because you just keep reharvesting them as far as something you can grow indoors that's edible.
Well, I sure appreciate your show. You do an amazing job. So I've got to learn how to do the newfangled things like the online and that kind of thing. So if you can give some emergency tips to a senior and that wants to learn about technology now. So.
Carla, thanks so much for your call this
Thank
morning.
Thank you.
Just a couple minutes left in the program. Let's try and squeeze Kate in. She is in North Ogden. Good morning, Kate.
Hi. You've talked about wrapping or painting trees, and what I want to know is if this is just for new trees or if I have to wrap established trees.
It depends on the species. Any thin bark tree that doesn't get that corky bark, it does benefit them. So apple trees, like ornamental and fruiting fruit trees, so ornamental cherries, ornamental pears, ornamental apples, all.
Okay, let me tell you what I've got. I've got a Bartlett pear, I've got two plums, and I've got a I believe it's called arborvitae. Okay. It's an evergreen type tree.
Okay, you don't want to paint the arborvitae.
Okay.
Leave it alone.
So, thank you. Anything that saves me work, I love. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't paint it. This is like 20 years old. I've never done it. I hear you talking about it, and I think, I've never done this on any of my trees. Yeah. Do I need it?
So we're running super short on time, so I'm going to jump in. But so on your fruit trees, it's just a good practice to get some tree tape or some inexpensive water-based latex, and in the fall paint the trunks or wrap the trunks, especially on your orchard trees, because they're notorious for getting damage on the south and west sides of the trees.
Right. Oh, this show goes by so quickly, Ton. Another day has passed really quickly. I want to just tell you folks that we do have a lot of fun stuff on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We talked about holiday cacti at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. You can find an article about that. Also, tips for first-time buyers of real Christmas trees. There's an article on our Facebook page on that. I also had Caitlin put up the video that you did telling people how to take care of poinsettias.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so that's a good one. And that's it for us this week.
Well, see you maybe next week.
Maybe next week. We may have another BYU game, so we're not sure if we'll have a show next week. But thanks so much for joining us, and have a great weekend. Hopefully we'll talk to you next Saturday.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.